Just ask yourself, when was the last time you went hunting? For more and more of us, the answer isn't just, it's been a while, it's never been. While Tennessee has held pretty steady in recent years, fewer Americans are waking up before dawn, putting on camouflage, and toting a rifle into the woods, and fewer young people especially. So we sent WPLN's Blake Farmer on a special multi-generational hunt.
An experienced turkey hunter looks a little like a sound effects artist. Leith Canondike has a half dozen instruments in his camo pack meant to attract a big gobbler in the woods of Lincoln County. One is a wooden paddle and what looks like a mini cigar box.
Native Americans probably would have had stuff like this. We can also use it for... There's nothing special about it, but a lot of turkeys have died because of it.
Canondike keeps his voice low. After all, we are hunting. He says he learned how to use all kinds of turkey calls from watching his uncles.
You ever seen a diaphragm call? This one's brand new, untouched.
He sticks a piece of plastic in his bearded cheek. Canondike makes his living as a game warden. He's a mountain of a man with a studious appreciation for one of the oldest industries in America.
Hunting and trapping's why we're here. I mean, if it wasn't for beaver skin hats that people wanted in Europe, we wouldn't have spread westward, and the Hudson Bay and Northwest companies wouldn't have ever established trapping posts, and North America wouldn't have been settled probably as quickly. But so it had a lot to do with our foundation of who we are today, and I think that's what we're trying to pass on.
Canondike has seen the trend lines, a fairly steady decline in hunters since the 1970s. Fewer young people are taking up what is, for most people, an expensive hobby. And that's why he goes out of his way to promote hunting to teens, starting with his two sons. Today, he's just the guide and loading a shotgun for his 14-year-old named Lake. He's never bagged a turkey, though he already calls hunting an addiction.
I mean, your heart is pumping real fast while you're aiming, getting ready to shoot.
The Canondikes live near the Alabama line, where barns and fence rows still dominate the landscape. But Lake says most of his friends at school don't hunt, and more often than not, they turn their noses up at it.
I mean, you could talk to a girl about it, she's throwing up over there. I'm like, I'm talking about it. I'm not showing you a picture of a doe that I just gutted or showing you a video. I did that once for 4-H. It ended up terrible.
He field-dressed a dove in front of his class. Their disgust was apparently obvious. The headwinds against hunting are pretty simple. An industry analysis from IBIS World this year says that as the country continues to urbanize, exposure to hunting becomes more limited, and more people see the activity in a negative light. Plus, fewer people have the connections it would take to get started, like knowing someone with land.
Maybe people don't have the opportunity that they used to have to access and hunt those pieces of property.
But Leith also recognizes a strange thing that's happening. Even as fewer of us hunt, census figures show hunters are spending more money doing it.
So you got all this stuff and people are bombarded with, what boots to wear and what camo to wear and what scent to use. And when I was a kid, man, I mean, I remember wearing multiple pairs of socks and, you wore your boots. When they started not fitting, you just took off a pair of socks,
Leith has become a bit of a gear hog at this point, too, but he says he tries to steer beginners toward what he sees as the character-building aspects.
Part of, taking kids hunting is there's a reward to patience. They're coming to us.
Leith and his son Lake are squatting against trees about 20 feet apart. They're trying to blend in as a big red-headed turkey follows a group of hens strutting through a swampy area. Leith gives the signal and Lake takes aim. A gobbler is in range.
Shoot him again. Hold on. Shoot him again if he comes back up. Never mind, you got him. Woo! Congratulations, man, on your first bird. Well, go get him. I can't even get up. My heart's racing.
The father and son take a photo together, posing with Lake's first kill. It's a portrait that many people treasure, but fewer may have of themselves. For Nashville Public Radio, I'm Blake Farmer.
Last week's deluge from the remnants of Hurricane Harvey has some Nashville homeowners finally ready to sell. Dozens of homes were inundated around White's Creek. Most had already turned down buyout offers from the city, which has purchased and demolished hundreds of structures following the floods of 2010. WPLN's Blake Farmer reports.
Dee Dee Brickner shakes her head looking at the pool she just upgraded on West Hamilton Avenue. It's full of mucky brown water.
Beautiful new liner.
Looks like a muddy lake.
Yeah, it does.
Last week, Brickner's ranch house on a flat 1 acre had more than a foot of water in the living room and kitchen. And again, the hardwoods buckled and the drywall is smelling moldy.
I mean, why would you repair a house once you realize what you've got? I mean, it shouldn't be repaired. It shouldn't have been repaired after 2010.
But the owner at the time turned down the buyout program. A few years later, Brickner purchased the brick one-story sight unseen in an auction, not realizing it was across the street from a creek notorious for rising out of its banks. It's now surrounded by empty lots. 41 homes up and down West Hamilton have been razed. The government has offered to do the same for Brickner.
And I've known that for a couple of years. Three, maybe.
But her tenants were happy, so she held off. After the latest episode, Brickner says she's done.
I'll throw up if I find out they aren't going to buy it.
We've actually gotten phone calls from some of those owners saying, I'm ready to talk buyout again.
Roger Lindsay oversees flood mitigation for Nashville, which has purchased 261 homes since 2010, with 90 more deals in the works. They're mostly houses built before the 1970s. That's when the city raised the standards for how high a new structure had to be above the floodplain. With buyouts, the federal government pays most of the cost, and the owner gets a fair market value.
Then we just demolish that home and return the land to a natural, more natural state. Sometimes we convert it into parkland. Other times it's used by community organizations to create an urban farm or a community garden.
The process can take a while. That's been the drawback for some. They've got a house that's unlivable, and it may take a year to finalize a buyout. So they just repair it and say a prayer. But Lindsay says last week's high water showed that for some homes, the question is not whether they will flood again, but when. For Nashville Public Radio, I'm Blake Farmer.
Tragedy has followed the hard-touring Jason Aldean, who is headlining the final night of the Route 91 Harvest Festival in Las Vegas. Rolling Stone says Aldean has been seemingly snake-bitten while touring. WPLN's Blake Farmer reports.
Jason Aldean is one of the most successful artists in country music at the moment, with 15 million albums sold. He's seen as an everyman kind of performer, and Nashville-based Rolling Stone editor Joseph Hudak says Aldean's fans feel a special bond with him. They call themselves Aldean's Army.
Not to choose the wrong analogy, but in a way, Aldean's Army and Aldean went through a war. It's unfathomable to process. And I don't know how, you know, the fans and how Jason himself are really going to walk through this together.
Even before Sunday night, Aldean's tours had dealt with death more than most. Over the course of a year, his tour bus struck a man on a highway in Indiana. A 22-year-old somehow fell to his death down a trash chute at a concert in Cleveland. And someone committed suicide in a restroom during a concert outside Atlanta. Still nothing compares to fleeing a stage under a hail of bullets as audience members are mowed down. Rolling Stone's Hudak says Aldean and many of his fans are forever changed. For Nashville Public Radio, I'm Blake Farmer.